This is the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. Your hosts, Sam Harris and Nicholas Farik, digest the most interesting, informative, and topical books, giving you their biggest insights. We expose different perspectives and tools to look at the world to make you wiser than yesterday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. My name is Nico. I'm joined, as usual, by my co-host, Sam. And we are now on to the last part of the Incertus series by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. The book is called Skin in the Game. And I must say, I feel kind of empty right now because it was a long series, a very interesting series. And now I finished it, I don't know what to do with my life. How about you, Sam?
Yeah, it's been really good, but I feel like I sort of almost could have had something slightly more conclusive for it. But perhaps we'll get that with this episode recording. And also, when you said that you feel really empty, I thought you were talking about the fact that I sort of have started doing a bunch of different challenges, one of which happens to be today, whereas let's just not eat for 40 hours. And yes, we now haven't eaten for 20 hours?
24.
I guess. Definitely feeling kind of hungry.
So if we start not making any sense anymore, then we can blame it on not being fed well.
Yeah. Or if we're just completely the best episode ever and just so wise and brilliant, then it's probably because we haven't been eating and we're just purely thinking about the right things. Who knows?
All right. So let's get into the book. Last book in the series, the Incerto series. And only after finishing The Skin in the Game, I finally found a way to summarize the whole series and all of the concepts that Taleb talks about in a few sentences. And so I'll give it my best shot now. And so the basic premise is that there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. And it's very, very difficult to predict things in nature or in society because these things are so complex. And so nature is structured in such a way that organisms or entities that are very fragile, which means that cannot deal with uncertainty or are hurt very much by big shocks, will die out. And so what exists in the world today, as far as humans and animals and living organisms goes, has survived over the past thousands of years and has proven to be pretty anti-fragile. So it's been proven adaptable to big changes in environments. And so that's where the book Antifragile talks about. It tries to identify what characteristics make something resistant to change and strong in the face of uncertainty. However, with modern technologies and modern societal changes, especially governments and nation states, Taleb sees that this natural Darwinism or the natural selection that kills off badly adapted entities and organisms is going away. And that has become because of a lack of skin in the game. And this is where this last book is about. And so it addresses the problems that are happening today, where some people manage to be anti-fragile at the expense of others. To give you one example, the 2007-2008 financial crisis was very bad for almost everyone. So a lot of people lost a lot of money in there. However, there were some individuals who managed to make a killing. They were taking huge risks with the money of someone else, where they managed to gather very, very big bonuses. But when the whole system collapsed, because they were taking so many risks, they were not the one paying the price. And so they didn't have skin in the game. And that is specifically, or more generally, what Taleb addresses in his book.
Yeah, nice summary. Certainly links into...
Thanks.
Yeah, lots of things in this accelerated technology, like healthcare, that sort of... We have suddenly lots more people that are sort of unhealthy and underlying health risks that are at risk right now and that we can't quite deal with all the problems. And then having companies that are sort of too big to fail that we can't let fail, but then they're more of a monopoly. But then when there's something fundamentally wrong with how the business works, it sort of brings down a lot more of the economy than if we have like a bunch of decentralized different businesses that some will survive more easily, some won't. But as an overall, the shock gets absorbed better. And the ones that are strong for the problem will still come out of it well.
Exactly. Mm. And so one of the terms, so he uses a lot of specific words, and I think quite a lot of them make a lot of sense in this context. And so one specific one that he focuses a lot on is called the Bob Rubin trade. And a Bob Rubin trade is basically a trade where you make a lot of money without risking anything. And so Bob Rubin was the chair of Citibank. And in the 10 years before the financial crisis of 2007-2008, he made a total of 120 million by working there. But as we all know, the bank collapsed because he was taking a lot of risks. But yeah, of course, he at that point was saying, oh, it's a black swan. I couldn't see this coming and I didn't know. And he didn't have to pay anything. So he made all the money and taxpayers bore the costs. And so, yeah, that's one interesting concept. And I think it's very well summarizes the main issue that Taleb talks about. But I mean, we can see this happening, you know, the skin in the game concept in a lot of other things as well.
Mm. Yeah, lots of things. I mean, we just mentioned that we're doing this fast today. And I think part of the why this is working is a bit more skin in the game, because I sort of publicly said I was doing it. And then suddenly you're much more likely to do it because you've got other people watching you, and you're suddenly like, ah, it just sort of suddenly puts a bit more risk on your own persona to make things happen. And I think it's a really good principle that you can actually leverage yourself to make you do things that you want to do and get the results you want by using skin in the game yourself or working with people that have skin in the game, which I think is much more, most of his points is like how to identify the right people to work with and who are the ones that are going to be the best in different situations, whether it's businesses or politicians, and why they should have skin in the game. So,
there he makes a big comparison between hedge fund managers and bankers. And so the main difference between the two, they trade differently, of course, but usually or almost always hedge fund managers have the majority of their own net worth inside of their hedge funds. And so they're using clients' money, but the majority of their own net worth is also in the fund. And so they have skin in the game. And so what you see is that a hedge fund manager that survives for a long time usually performs pretty well. And so if you would consider to invest your money, it would be a pretty good spot to invest it with someone who has their own skin in the game. If you look at a banker, however, if a banker makes a mistake, he doesn't go bankrupt. He can still stay in his own, like whatever he's doing. And so he would say, avoid investing money with people that don't invest their own money. And likewise, don't take advice from someone who doesn't invest in the way that they give you advice about.
Mm.
So basically, instead of asking someone, what should I invest in? You should ask them, okay, what do you invest in? And that would be then the best advice, because that's how their skin is in the game, basically.
Yeah. So it says, I think the quote is, don't tell me what you think, just tell me what's in your portfolio. And yes,
exactly.
Yeah, he goes a bit further. I think there's another quote, like, people's explanations for what they do are just words, stories that they tell themselves, not the business or proper science. So what they actually do, on the other hand, is tangible and measurable, and it's what you should be focusing on, which goes into the same stuff, really. And yeah, it's really nice. I like this principle, because so many people will sort of give you good advice on things and tell you stuff, but it's like, well, what are they actually doing? It's much more important.
And so, again, I mean, we've discussed this in previous episodes, but Taleb really loves his ancients and people that wrote things thousands of years ago, because the fact that we still hear about these things means that they've stood the test of time. And so he makes quite often the reference to Hammurabi's code. Hammurabi was a very old king. I don't know when, but he lived before Jesus did. And so his code was as follows. If an architect or a house builder in his time builds a house, it collapses. And if the owner of the house dies, then the builder of the house needs to get killed. If the son of the owner of the house dies, then the son of the architect needs to be killed, and so on. And so that is, for him, the proof that ancient civilizations realized that skin in the game was necessary. And this is something that we're lacking today. I mean, today there's no repercussions for mistakes made, at least not in some professions. And so there he makes the distinction between a plumber and a financial economist, for example. Because if a financial economist predicts something to happen and it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter, because he doesn't have skin in the game and people don't really hold him accountable for his predictions. However, if a plumber makes a mistake, he's going to be held accountable by the person whose house just flooded. So yeah, there's a big difference there.
Definitely. So things like all the sort of review systems on websites now that sort of, they make businesses be more ethical because they're actually going to supply you the product is like a useful thing from that. But I think he gives some examples of like also people building bridges used to have to go and sit under them for a while or like sleep under them whilst they're building them, that kind of thing, to make sure that they like never leaving it kind of faulty whilst they sort of...
I think
dead stuff.
It was in ancient France, or maybe not that ancient, maybe up to 100 years ago. Mm. The people or the architects that designed the bridge had to go live under it for the first few months. Mm. Something crazy like that, which in the end, it makes sense, right? It's the whole point of the book. I mean, if you're very bad at building bridges and you have skin in the game, which means that you go live under the bridge that you designed, if you're bad at building bridges, you're going to die because the bridge is going to collapse and you're going to be underneath.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the problem. That selection doesn't happen with the interventionism that's currently happening.
Definitely.
And so he specifically addresses, you know, all the bailouts that are happening in the markets. And it's super relevant because it's, again, happening today. You know, there's a lot of companies who were badly managed that have been buying back shares in the billions over the past 10 years because of all the quantitative easing and all the low interest rates. And today, the moment things go difficult, things become more difficult, suddenly all these companies are begging for bailouts. Mm. And so Nassim Taleb would absolutely, without a doubt, argue that they should go bust.
Yeah.
Because it's their own mistake. And these managers need to be held accountable.
Definitely.
For what they did.
Yeah, agreed. He does go further into architects as well. He doesn't seem to like them that much. I think he's got a quote like, architects today build to impress other architects, and we end up with strange, irreversible structures that do not satisfy the well-being of their residents. It takes time and just like progressive tinkering to make things better. And I think he complains about like designers on trains, as in he used to have like a place where he could put his coffee cup because he just used to read things and have like a shelf that was flat, but then they made it kind of like slightly curved just to make it look better and like, you know, trains look a bit sexy, but they should be, the people that use trains should be the one designing it, because if they actually like feel the problems of being a train user and actually would have not done something like that. So
I've noticed this kind of phenomenon in movies as well. Movies that are found like the best movies by critics, I usually really don't like at all.
Mm.
And so there's like there movie producers and movie directors, if they make movies to impress critics and other directors and other producers, they're usually not that good. And so for me, the Oscars, for example, is not a very good representation of what actually were the best movies during the year. I think Skin in the Game is also illustrated by the Minority Rule, which was, I found, a very, very interesting concept. So the Minority Rule is as follows. If you have, let's say, 100 people, if 3 to 4% of a group have a significant skin in the game on a certain subject, they can influence the opinion of the whole group. And that might sound very abstract, but let's make it very clear. So this is the reason why they don't serve peanuts on airplanes, for example, is because a small minority of the population is very allergic to peanuts. And so they can't eat peanuts. The rest of the people can eat peanuts, but they can also eat other things. And so the people that cannot eat peanuts have enough skin in the game to influence the airlines to just forget about peanuts as a whole, because they don't want to take the risk. And so in this way, the minority can influence the majority if they have enough skin in the game. I found that a pretty interesting concept.
Yeah. And it might not seem so relevant now, but back when it started, like it says, like the spread of automatic shift cars wasn't maybe because of everyone preferred them. It was just because if you can drive a manual, you can already drive an automatic. But if you can only drive automatic, you need automatic. So it was easier to sort of just make, if you're going to make 100 cars, well, you might as well make like the automatic version, because you just don't need to have to worry if you've got enough left in stock when you kind of only got one left in the forecourt kind of thing, as in anyone can still buy it.
Yeah. And this minority rule is also an explanation for some historic events like the growth of Christianity and Islam. And so the more stubborn people from a religion, the higher the chance of it spreading. And so the more tolerant, ironically, the more chances of a religion disappearing over time. One realization I made, I watched a talk of Taleb about Skin in the Game, where he talks about, he starts off and he says, I should give a summary of the book Skin in the Game, but he specifically says that his books are very hard to summarize. Because if it can be summarized, then why not just write a summary to get your points across?
Yeah.
I found that, I immediately grasped why it was pretty tough for us, to summarize his books.
Yeah,
definitely. It's a mixture of so many things. And so I think you have to read the books to fully appreciate them.
Mm.
The, the concepts, like the way Taleb writes is with so many, like, because he combines, you know, autobiographic parts, he combines mythology, scientific papers, economic terms, and some other things, you know, he writes fiction with his fictional Fat Tony and Nero characters.
Yeah, got a bit confused by that.
I mean, it becomes very hard to summarize. So
definitely.
I get your
pain.
There's
so much things into each other things, and so you can't sort of talk about one element, because if you've got so many elements tying into it, it's nice. It's nice to work them together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think like what we discussed on the 3% rule, I think you're saying why you have to have a lot of skin in the game when you are the 3%, otherwise it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So in McDonald's, it doesn't work the other way around. Or he says like pizza is the same story because it's just commonly accepted by everyone. And unless you're in a place where you're literally, everyone is just like a caviar eater or something, you're not going to get blamed for ordering pizza. So that's more like a majority one. We'll kind of always win because no one has enough skin in the game on the other things, unless, you know, you're allergic to cheese or something and you can't get pizza without cheese. At which point, then yeah, they'll order you something else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. What about the next concept? The Lindy effect, because he talks quite a lot about this as well.
Quite a few of his books.
Yeah. The Lindy effect, the name comes from a restaurant in New York, which is called Lindy or Lindy's, where they served very mediocre cheesecake and very mediocre coffee. But the reason for the name is that actors that were without a job usually came together there to discuss plays, you know, Broadway plays and movies. And there they figured out that the longer a Broadway play was being performed, the longer it is expected to be performed in the future as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a play that's been around for a year, you can expect it to be around for another year as well. If a play has only been around for a week, it's not going to be around as long as another play that has been around for a month, for example.
Yeah.
And so that's a linear effect. And so that can be found in many things.
Mm. Yeah, as in, has the same thing for books. Like if a book's been in print for 100 years, it's much more likely that it'll be in print for another 100 years. Whereas if it was just released this year, it's unlikely that it's going to be around in 100 years' time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also same with technologies.
Right?
I'm trying to keep up to date with the newest trends. Reading this book, I realized that I should pay more attention to technologies that have been around for a while, because they probably will still be around for a while, because everyone's saying like, everything is going to be disrupted and everything's changing. Mm. But odds are, if you put your money on something that has existed for a long time, you're going to be better off.
Yeah, as in, I guess we can look at other technologies that we've become very used to but have disappeared in our time, even like CD players and sort of cassettes and these kind of things, or mini disc players, like, what the hell happened to them? And there's a lot of things that actually have come and gone as technology that sort of, remember when DVDs came out, and when they first came out, you're like, well, what's going on here? And then sort of after a few years, it's sort of like everyone just had DVDs and DVD stores, and you know, making a DVD collection. And then that's like, yeah, no one's used a DVD in the last 5 years kind of thing. And when they will happen in another 10 years time.
Taleb also uses this knowledge when he writes a book. And so what he says to himself is, when he's writing a book, if you want to write for someone that lives in 20 years, so if you want to write a book that is readable or interesting for someone in 20 years, you should write a book for someone that lived 20 years ago. That's relevant and interesting for a person that lived 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's actually the best way to make sure that your book is relevant. And so, yeah, if you look, for example, have you read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie?
Yeah.
It's a book that came out in like 1920 or something. It's like almost 100 years old. And so it's... They made a new version, which is adapted for today, which also includes social media and all these things. And so I read both after each other, and the new version is terrible. It's really, really bad. So again, making it more modern really does make it better or more relevant. And I'm sure the new version is going to be forgotten in a few years, while the old version will still be around in the 22nd century.
He goes very deep into in the book four, the Wolves Among Dogs book section. He calls books, parts of his books, books, which is confusing. But anyway, the book four, Wolves Among Dogs, he goes very full on his dislike of companies and why anyone would ever have a job, which is always fun to read and helpful as two people that don't have normal jobs as such.
Yes.
But he says a lot of kind of offensive things if you're an employee. he says, by being an employee, you signal a certain type of domestication. So if you've been employed for a while, it's like strong evidence of your submission. and like the years of depriving yourself of personal freedoms for like 9 hours every day and this ritualistic punctual arrival at the office is denying your own schedule and yeah, not even like having the freedom to do what you want on the way back home. You're just like an obedient housebroken dog. And you're like, ooh. Yeah. But then when you think about like, the long term, it's a bit absurd that you do spend 40 years of your life doing exactly what someone else wants you to do under their framework of things and not really having time to think your own thoughts. And you're like, yeah, well, that's really weird. And yeah, I guess for like people are no longer owned by a company, but by something worse, the idea that they need to be employable. The employable person is embedded in an industry with fear of upsetting not just their employer, but other potential employers. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of live in this framework that you just have to always be like this. It's not just for like the employee, you kind of everything you do, like the skills you try and take on, like the courses you do to like further yourself, like your networking, is just to keep yourself in this structured prison that you're in kind of thing. And that relates to what I was talking about earlier about the people that are a bit more free who say kind of weird things that might like risk them losing a job or something. You can kind of trust them because they're not worried about fitting into like the normal network. They're just actually just doing what they think is best, perhaps.
Yeah. I noticed that whenever you meet someone, they'll always ask you like, where do you work? What do you do? And so the standard is you should be working for a company. Right? That's what most people do. And that's what you should be doing, I guess. And I like to agree with the theories of Taleb because as you said, we don't have like traditional careers and we don't work for big corporations or big companies. But then again, I ask myself, what if everyone would suddenly say, I agree with this?
Yeah.
What would happen then?
We'd have no companies at all. And we'd have no like organization of stuff. And it would be a nightmare.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just not sure because he makes a big differentiation between entrepreneurs and chief executives. So entrepreneurs are people who build a company, who invest everything they have. They invest all their time into building a business and adding value to society. While chief executives, they manage a very, very big corporation. But if the corporation goes bankrupt, then they still get out with large bonuses.
Yeah, I think he calls them like rent seekers, which is his term for people that just want to make money without adding any value to the world. So they just want to own something that gives them money without changing things or making it better.
And risking anything from their own, right? Yeah. So, and there he makes a very big differentiation. And there he argues that everyone should aspire to be an entrepreneur and build a business. I've been thinking about that. What if everyone decided, okay, I want to be an entrepreneur. What would happen? How would the world look? It seems like so many things would stop existing or the way they are. I don't know. It's curious.
Well, there has to be a lot of more freelance style things because you couldn't just run like a business as such, but you could do like freelancy things where you sort of apply services to different companies. So you don't necessarily have to just work for one company, but you could say, hey, I'm really good at doing like admin-y stuff. I can just do admin for like three different companies. And so you kind of specialize in something. But then how do you ever have a factory? Well, I guess, you have a factory, but then like some people come and do the parts of factory laborers as a business and it's just all very broken and just like it still kind of works, I guess. Hypothetically speaking, everyone could just be a contractor that does their own thing.
I feel like an argument against any social support systems. Because I think one of the strengths, for example, here in Belgium, big corporations cannot hire and fire, like for example, in the US. And so if you get hired, I think need at minimum, like they cannot fire you with 1 month's notice. They need at least two or three or even more if you've been working there for a longer time. And so there, I think what he would argue is that because of that, people lose their skin in the game and they have too much of a safety net. And so they are not as involved anymore. And if everyone would start thinking as a freelancer that you could be fired the next day if you don't perform, I think they would be more free. I don't know. It would surely be an interesting world, but I'm not sure if society would be better off.
No. It definitely relies on people. Some people really wouldn't even like it. And I speak to some people and they just get like, they just like sort of consistency and the feeling of safety of just, and having regular stuff and don't like to decide things for themselves anyway. And it depends. And he talks about, but when you glorify it, it sounds nice, but you could sort of say it in a different way. But he's got this quote from like this, one of Aesop's fables, I think, like a dog boasts to a wolf about all the comforts that he has and the luxuries and that he gets free food all the time. And the wolf is like, oh, maybe I'll enlist to become like a dog and live with someone. And then the wolf asks the dog about his collar. And then he gets terrified by the fact that he understands what the collar's for. And it sort of takes away all his freedoms. And he's like, I don't want any free meals. I don't want anything. And he runs away and just goes and be a wolf. And it sounds great, you know, be a wolf, do what you want, like live this free life. But some people like sort of the consistency and safety and doing these different things. So it's a, is a bit more of a choice to do what makes you happy, I guess, in that sense. Although Taleb does also go further to say that you are maybe more free, well, more safer if you are a wolf in some ways, because, you know, the you're like at the mercy of your owners who may suddenly just run out of money and can't afford you and kick you out. And then you're like a dog who doesn't know how to feed itself or something. And when you work for a company, you sort of, you're not used to innovating. You just do the thing that you do, but then suddenly the company goes bust, or like there's no longer jobs in the kind of thing that you do. And you sort of, you're less bendable and less anti-fragile than you are as an entrepreneur, where you can kind of quickly change what it is that you're doing and adapt.
Yeah, it's clear that Taleb is like, the way he looks at the world is definitely not the way everyone looks at the world.
Yeah.
I mean, he offends a lot of people, and he disrespects almost majority of people out there in everything that he says and what he doesn't respect. And, you know, he doesn't lie. He doesn't think too highly of employees, et cetera.
Yeah. So most people he assumes is pretty stupid, which means he kind of thinks of himself very highly.
But then, yeah, that last part is very clear. But then again, he says that he prefers to have a drink with a taxi driver than with an intellectual.
Yeah. You know? As in some ways, he prefers common people that accept that they're common rather than like people that think they're smart but aren't as smart as him. And he kind of gets more annoyed. I don't know if that's almost like the concept of, you know, the people that you, like countries that border each other, like hate each other. So like the Pakistanis like hate sort of the people in Tajikistan or something, or like in Wales they hate people in England, and I don't know, maybe in Belgium you hate the French or something, that kind of stuff, whereas someone comes along from further away and they like you. So in Europe you feel a bit embarrassed being British, because if most people don't like us that much, anywhere else in the world they love British people. They're like, oh my god, a British person, wow. And yeah, I don't know if he's just sort of, because they're a bit close and he just doesn't, they kind of, he feels like giving slightly different messages that lead people, whereas like taxi people are just a bit more like far away and distant from his ways of thinking, and he just finds it interesting to talk to them in some ways.
Yeah, perhaps.
Probably not. Anyway, right. I said some words that lasted a while. Good.
Should we like review things?
Yeah, let's do that.
Perhaps we can talk about this book specific and then also a bit about the whole Incerto series?
Sure.
Right, so your rating on Skin in the Game.
I think it was really useful to round up a lot of the concepts he introduced, and does make sense of a lot of things. Again, I felt like it could have been a bit shorter and some of the things didn't always add up, but perhaps it's almost a book that needs to be reread to get the full value of it still. But yeah, I could say it certainly wasn't as good as Anti-Fragile. Anti-Fragile was better for sure. But I'd say it's more like an 8 or a 7, which is kind of the pussy level of things, and like it sort of changed my fundamental thinking about some things, and it's really been helpful. But I don't think I wouldn't really recommend people to start with reading this book. So perhaps I should say it's less in terms of it wouldn't rank it highly. So yeah, maybe more of a 7 or a 6 in that sense. But it's fundamental in a series, and the series was great, and it makes lots of sense. I'm just going around in circles of like, oh, it's great, it's not great, could be better. Good. I'm going with 7 because that's the central areas of where I've been.
All right, 7, noted. So for me, I think as an added value to the series, because it follows Anti-Fragile, and so the last part of Anti-Fragile also talks about Skin in the Game, and so in addition to that, I think it's not that much of an added value. I think it's after The Bed of Procrustes, the book that can be removed from the series. If it wasn't there, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. That being said, I still think it's a great book. And one of the cool things about all the books is that in theory, you could read them on their own. Right? You don't have to read the other books. So you can just start by reading Skin in the Game, but I would not recommend it. So I would say if you can only read 3 books, then you shouldn't, of the Incerto series, you shouldn't read Skin in the Game. And so it's again, a long explanation for my final score, which is also a 7.
Good.
Yeah, that's it. All right, let's discuss the whole Inserto series then. What's your opinion there? And some, like, how would you suggest, would you recommend it to people, et cetera?
Yeah, definitely. I would really recommend it to people. I'd worry that some people get a bit offended by the whole thoughts around being an employee-employer relationships. But I still think a lot of people who are really smart but have jobs would still really like it, that do things like banking and risk and this sort of stuff. And yeah, I think it's just a really good way to view the world and think about a bit of more of a longer term mindset, because we just do run around being very caught up in like the recent years and where we're going in the next year. We don't think about like the longer term view and how to be a more resilient species and this kind of stuff. And that's the points that we started with, about we kind of lost our ability to evolve as such, because we kind of are trying to protect what we have in the moment right now. We're not willing to lose things to actually gain in the future in the long run, and just sort of, we're not mining for the anti-fragile parts of society to be the strongest and to evolve. We're kind of just focusing on keeping hold of what we have and just, or getting like new things, and we're not really thinking logically as a species about how to be the most resilient, well, the most anti-fragile species that we can, which clearly we have been, because we have been around for a very long time. Sure, compared to other species, we haven't been around half as long as like jellyfish and crocodiles, which probably will still be around in millions of years when maybe we aren't, kind of thing. But if we listened to them, we could probably stick around a lot longer if the way we sort of build society was to take all these things into account. So it's super useful for not just bankers who want to make money, and entrepreneurs who want to make money, but like politicians and people thinking about how they want to change the world, and environmentalists, and like all these sort of people actually would gain a lot from having these opinions put into their head and like thought about. Mm-hmm. And what about
you? Agree. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I think the Inserto series was first time I read like a non-fictional series, books that like, yeah, around a certain central theme. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm very happy that we went through the whole thing in one go as well. And we read them all in chronological order.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a very refreshing view on the world, and explains some phenomena which I couldn't explain before, or I didn't have any theories for, which is ironic, because one of the arguments or one of the core principles of Taleb is that we shouldn't try and explain stuff because it's too complex for us to understand.
Yeah, I mean, he does a lot of explaining, despite saying that like explanations are quite right.
Yeah. Anyway, I would say that for me, Inserto is like, it's a must read for anyone who wants to understand the world.
Yeah, better. It's not always an easy read at times, but it's really worth it. And I definitely feel a lot wiser having read it.
Absolutely.
And if I can always sort of explain that wisdom to other people all the time, but yes, it's been great.
I think that, and also the sum of the books is better. Well, the sum of the total is better than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think Inserto, so the whole five books is together way better than just all the separate books summed up. So if you read one, I think you should make the dedication to read all of them.
Yeah, maybe a bit of a slog, but it'll be totally worth it. And if you can, read it with someone else that's reading it and talk to them about it, because
yes,
get so much out of doing that.
Yes. And I mean, if not, if you can't find anyone else, just give us a call.
Yeah, we're happy to discuss it.
I love the book, and yeah, I have to discuss it indeed.
Yeah.
All right. Sure. I think that rounds up the episode.
Cool.
We haven't decided yet what we're going to read next, but we will.
Yeah, we've got like a big list of things that we kind of want to read. And we've also been discussing that actually maybe we just take Taleb's suggestions and just go into like the historically amazing books and start reading new stuff. Debate.
We'll see. It's going to be a mystery until we publish the episode. So until then, yeah. See you.
Ciao.
And have a good time. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. As you know, we are doing this to try and help you get smarter. Well, I have another project for podcast listeners just like you who want to be smart. Nico and I learned so much from reading the same things together and discussing them, and I wanted there to be a tool that made it easy for anyone to listen to the same podcasts and books together with their friends. So I'm building the app Syncify, which does just that. It connects you with your friends in the app. Listen to the same things at the same time, or create shared playlists and work through them at your own pace. You can share comments and highlights of your favorite bits, and become smarter by seeing what your friends think around the same content that you enjoy. As a bonus, it also helps with your mental health and reduces isolation. Personally, I hate publishing my life on social media, which I find all rather antisocial, and I don't go out of my way to phone a friend for no reason other than the fact I feel lonely. But I do love doing things with other people, and having my friends listen to the same things is really awesome. I mean, I used to speak to Nico like once a year before we started this book club together, and now we talk all the time because we're just doing something together. So do yourself a favour and sign up for the Syncify app at syncifyapp.com, and I really hope it helps. Thanks a lot for listening. If you enjoyed the show or learned anything new, be sure to share it with your friends. And I just can't tell you how great it is if you were to happen to leave a review on iTunes. These really do help quite a lot. If you have any questions or books that you'd like us to read, feel free to reach out to us through the website, wiserpod.com, or reach out to us on LinkedIn. And just keep loving and keep learning, and ideally, keep listening. Big love from Sam and Nico, and the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast.